Jumping in live, we are not going to have an intro tonight because it looks like we might be having technical difficulties, but we are going to roll on through because Black people are an inventive people and we just invent as we go along. This is the Black album. Prince had a Black album. Jay-Z had a Black album.
Did Prince have a Black album?
Prince had a Black album?
He had it. Oh, bro, y'all don't know about the Black album?
Yeah, no, what was on the Black album for Prince?
So first of all, Prince had a Black album. Mm-hmm. And it was about to be put out, and he pulled it because he thought he had a spiritual situation that he thought he was about to put out something into the world that had some wrong forces on it or whatnot, and pulled it. And it became the biggest bootlegged album of his career. Everybody wanted to get their hands on it. And there were some floating around the European market and the German market. Eventually, I got a tape of it years ago. Now that he has passed away, his estate wants to get every dime that they possibly can out of the situations. They didn't release it, so it's out now.
But, I know that.
Yeah, if you go to Spotify, if you go to Apple, look for the Black album, Prince's Black album. There's a song on there called Bob George. It's one of my favorites. Yeah. Everybody's got a Black album. So anyways, people listening, the reason that you may be hearing that is I can see us all on screen, but apparently it's not the same for everybody. So I might be looking like a black box and not even existing here on this here podcast. But we're going to get started anyways. Today we are talking about a couple of things. So we are talking about a parent's bill of rights. But my introduction being the Bayesian of this show, a parent's bill of responsibilities. Because we always talk about rights. Rights. Oh, rights. Oh, parents have rights too. Oh, they should have rights. They should have rights. And I'm like, well, damn it. They also have a role and responsibilities and other things. We talked about it a little bit on this show, but we're going to talk about it today. And it's good that we have Robert Smith was here today to kind of moderate the opinions. Robert Smith is also to moderate the opinions because we always need a mediating force because sometimes we can go off the rails. But first, let me set it up. Ray, don't I see your face. Like you're acting like it's not you that goes off the rails sometimes. I can see it on your face. But anyways, let's just start here first. Republicans, Raymond's party, the Republicans, have a bill of rights that they're pushing right now. And it says to support our children, provide for their education, promote their well-being and secure a brighter future. We, the parents of the United States, enjoin this parent's bill of rights. Now, I love how they say we, the parents of the United States, knowing that they don't mean me. But anyways, they have five things here.
Kind of mean you, because if we're going to talk about colorism in the United States, you fall on a favorable side of that, sir. But go ahead.
Bruh, the Republicans, when they get themselves a Negro, they get themselves the darkest one they can get. They got, look at Tim Scott. Tim Scott is 2 days off the boat and they got him. So don't even pull that with me. Tim looked like he's like standard issue motherland and he got right onto the front of the line. Stop it. And how many can I name? I can name names. I could keep going, but anyways, I'm not going to do it. It's the Republicans it's the Democrats that like the Beijing.
All right, but sir, listen. So look at this Bill of Rights, right? You tell me what's not sensible about this Bill of Rights. I put it out on Twitter, right? What's not sensible on this Bill of Rights? It says, right to know what's being taught in schools and see reading material.
You already have that right.
They already have that right.
But the reason they're pushing this right is because Republicans want to remind people they have that right so that they can antagonize them to go attack schools. Right.
That's right.
The right to be heard. Don't you want to be heard as a parent?
They have that right.
Yeah. They have the right. Well, Black people don't have the right to be heard because obviously they're pulling our books off of shelves. So do we really have the right to be heard?
So this is another one of those instances in which you can take laws that are being proposed in order to use it for your benefit as opposed to it coming for your detriment. And so when it says the right to be heard, I'm thinking, and that sounds to me like, you know, someone that is about to defend their dissertation on parent engagement, I know that these folks only look at parent engagement through the eyes of the white middle class. And so that that viewpoint is not necessarily the viewpoint of minoritized people, in the sense of if you're racially marginalized, then folks are not necessarily checking for you at these schools. And so why not now use this as a way to catapult your voice into being heard, right? You can do that.
You think the Republicans want that?
I don't, I'm not saying, I don't think that they want that, but sometimes you gotta, sometimes you have to use the master's tools in order to defeat the master. Sorry.
All right, well, I am the master, and it's my tools. They're not the masters. They a bunch of mediocre individuals that got catapulted to where they are based upon 400 years of unearned privilege. Anyways.
This is the same group of people that proposed, well, make parents should be the ones interviewing and hiring principals.
Ooh, damn. I mean, listen.
Here, but like, what? And parents' bills of rights. How come we can't talk about a family's bill of rights? Because what if it's not your parents?
A student bill of rights.
I got you that. Yeah. Because it should include guardians.
Yeah.
Just anybody who has guardianship over a child, period, should have, let's just... Quickly, the right to see what's in schools and read materials, the right to be heard, the right to see the school budget and spending, the right to protect their child's privacy, violent activity at Chris, school. You have a right to all these things now.
Chris.
Char.
Number three.
Yeah.
Right to see school budget and spending. Yeah. You yourself talk about how a lot of these deals get sealed before the actual deal, right? So like the meeting before the meeting.
That's right.
Right? And so being transparent about what a school budget looks like and how that money is being spent, I think that could be somewhat beneficial. So like, what if parents are in the room when these union negotiations between the schools and unions are taking place, and parents now see that, you know, they don't have any folks that are on their side or in their corner, and nobody gives a shit about them. I think that would be a good thing for parents to see that.
All right. Well, listen, I'm going to jump to, because that's on the right side of the aisle. We know that, first of all, sometimes we talk about these things as if we don't know where they come from politically. Mm-hmm. We're talking about them at face value. We know that this is a scam. We know that this is a right-wing scam. The Bill of Rights, parents' Bill of Rights, comes out of people thinking that Florida's Ron DeSandwich and Virginia's Glenn Bumpkin, those two won because of parents, right? And now we're going to be the party of parents, and we're going to do parent better than parent. We know who they mean. They mean Moms for Liberty. They mean white parents. And they mean to aggravate and weaponize those particular parents to look at the curriculum for any signs of civil rights, to look at the budget for any signs of paying for SEL or CRT or things that they don't like, to be heard because, you know, this country has a terrible problem with not listening to white moms and white mothers and white people. And now it's finally time for this country to listen to white women, moms, and parents, right? That's what this is coming from on the Republican side. Like that other side has taken over. They've taken over. They've taken over your schools. They didn't hire a diversity coordinator. They got your daughter sitting in some stuff. They got your daughter sitting in some stuff right now that's making her want a black boyfriend. Right? That's what this is about.
Oh, God, stop it. Stop this.
Let's just be real. That is what this is about. But
what do you have to say for the Republican Party on this as a Republican?
First and foremost, right? I do not speak for the whole Republican Party. I speak Raymond, and that's it.
Y'all don't have a unified front?
Hell no, ain't no unified front. The racist bastards. Are you kidding me? I know what I'm dealing with, right? And so with me knowing what I'm dealing with, it allows me to be a better steward for Republicans that are one party issue voters, right? And so I make no fronts for how racist this party is, but on the flip side, right, the other party is racist too. It's just that they do a better job of disguising their race. So it's the difference between being subtly racist and being overtly racist, right?
Ray, you just like a tax cut.
Well, that too.
You ain't no damn Republican. You just cheat.
No, well, I am.
you just don't want to like tap into the kitty. You just don't want to put anything in the kitty. That's all.
you know, y'all socialists, and I don't believe in that shit.
Anyways, well, I'm not a socialist. Here we go. So on the other side of the fence, GOP put out their parents' rights bill, but Democrats strike back. Our friend Kerry Rodriguez at the National Parents Union is quoted in the story by the 74 as basically saying that the right wing is tone deaf. It's just so tone deaf to where parents are. How do you have a parents' bill of rights in 2023 that doesn't mention student progress or the right to read and write? She says further, I was like, do Republicans know any black and brown people? See, ego is your best self-care. Just, so, like, so just asking straight up questions. So.
Absolutely they do. They know a whole hell of a lot of black and brown people. More specifically, they go take that down to Dade County. That'll show you who they know.
What black and brown people Republicans know?
In Dade County? Well,
in Dade County, well, those are Cubans. Those are Cubans. I mean, that's different, right? Like, those are people that got... Well, I mean, those are the bougie people that got kicked out by Castro, and they had all their stuff taken. So, of course, they were Republicans.
Can't see you. And so,
no, I mean, I'm just doing it because it's historically accurate, yeah. Right? Like, they got all their stuff taken from them, and, you know, they had to swim from Cuba to Florida. When they got there, they became Uber Republicans because they were like, he took all my stuff. And they, you know, they didn't ask any questions about how they had gained that stuff. But anyways, the Democrats fired back with their own bill, I think in large part based upon the work of the National Parents Union. So now we've got dueling bills.
Shout out Kerry.
Where's the Democratic bill, Chris?
And MPU for putting in the work.
I think it's in process. I don't know. See, it says here that they were meeting with them to defeat the Republican bill. But the day after, they announced that a Democrat was introducing their own bill. And it was going to have all the stuff in it, like mental health and some of the more therapeutic things that students need in it. So, you know, this is like a mommy-daddy thing. The daddy is like, you just need a kick in the butt. You know, the child just needs a kick in the butt. And then the Democrats, he just needs a hug. Neither one of them are talking about student achievement. Neither one of them is talking about, like, you know, outcomes necessarily. But they both want to, as we call back in the day, front. They want to front. And high side on this
thing, that's as recent as yesterday. Front.
Well, nah, fronting is old, bro. You got to have gray in your beard for fronting. But anyways, this brings me to the question of this. Like, this brings me to the question of why we keep talking about parents' rights when we know that they have all these rights, but they don't use them. There are teachers that are sitting in classrooms on student or parent conference night by themselves. Look like the damn Maytag repairman sitting there by themselves.
No,
looking lonely, looking tired.
Neither one of us gonna allow you to do that shit.
No.
They left 18 phone calls to the house. Your child hasn't.
That speaks to exactly what I just said in terms of like how folks, especially. So here's the deal: over 80% of people that identify as racialized white that are teaching in the teaching field, right? So when I make a statement like, you know, folks look at parent engagement through the lens of the white middle class, many of those 80% fall into that category as to how they look at parental engagement. And so they look at it like, oh, well, you know, these black and brown people, they're not showing up to my curriculum night. They're not showing up to the back to school night. They don't care about their kids, right? They're not factoring into the equation that folks have to work. They're not factoring into the equation that not only do folks have to work one job, but more than likely,
you're about to say it and it's not true.
More than likely, in some neighborhoods, you may have to work more than one job in order to stay afloat in terms of how much things cost. And listen, and so I may not have the statistics. If you have the statistics, pull them up. But I know from lived experience, based off of interacting with my parents every day, what they go through, how many jobs they have to work.
Oof. I mean, there's some people that ain't got one job, but okay, keep going. Keep going. I mean,
Wait, jump in. So part of the challenge is that, yes, do parents attend parent-teacher conferences? Meh, maybe. But like, that's not really a marker of parent engagement.
It's not at all.
And parent involvement. Like, that's a false premise. Like, it is a way in which parents can communicate with teachers. So, for example, if we do an analysis of the districts or schools or whatever we're talking about, where there's a low parent participation in parent-teacher conferences, I always want to know, okay, well, what other times of day, the week, do you offer parent-teacher conferences, and do you always offer it at the school as opposed to in close proximity to the crib? Like, if you're not doing that, then I always say to folks, like, nah.
You don't want people to come.
Yeah, you don't want people to come. Like, what? And if I'm working third shift in Detroit in manufacturing, or second shift, and that's the only time you do parent-teacher conferences, and I'm an hourly worker, I can't give up my bread to do that.
Okay, this whole show, yeah. I'm gonna play the Bayesian devil's advocate.
So let me, you always say that.
I would say, like, you know, I don't want to be the devil's advocate. I'm gonna be pretending to be the not God advocate. Okay, anyways. And it's because I like to be real. Sometimes I think we get so kind of academic on shit sometimes because we didn't dissertations and stuff, you know. Some of us have done dissertations or whatnot. I think we get kind of academic. So, anyways, let me just say this. It's not me, but there's gonna be an educator somewhere listening to this who's gonna be like, it's interesting that it's only one group that I seem to have this problem with. You can talk about jobs and not having this and blah, blah, blah. You could keep doubling down on every excuse that there is.
Okay.
And I'm still going to be somebody who's listening to y'all talking, and I have other people showing up when you're not showing up. And them other groups are really about their business. They know that this
is y'all these findings. I cannot wait to defend this dissertation and I show y'all these findings, boy. I swear to God, it's gonna change the game. Because like it's so the way that
I don't want to, let me just say this much. I don't want to defend the school system for middle class practices.
But you are,
because they are run by middle class people, with middle class everything. But it is also a contest. And we're being out contested by groups that shouldn't be out contesting us in some ways. And when I'm starting to see the separation, the stratification, like who is gaining a foothold where and which, I feel like we are losing lots of footholds, not just this one that I'm talking about right now. Chris, Black people used to be the second, or used to be the number one largest minority, first of all, at one point in history for a long period of time, was the number. And I don't think we paid attention to the fact when that number was shifting. I don't think we just kind of, whatever it
is. What does that number have to do with parents' engagement?
I think that there are a number of ways in which we are being competed with and we are losing the competition, even as we have valid reasons for saying why we're losing. We have people eating our lunch. And we can keep we can keep excusing ourselves to death as we become 13% and then probably 11% and then 8% and then 1%. And then there's just going to be Tim Scott and Candace Owens left. All right. Because, you know, the only place where you can still be Black and mediocre and still have a lifestyle and a living is in the Republican Party. And there's not enough spots for all of us. So we have to start competing for some other things. I know I'm going in a lot of different directions, but what I'm just saying right now is, I don't think that we gain a lot by being professional excusers of us not showing up when we should show up.
So first off, right, we have to define when it is we're supposed to show up, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you are a school and you just wrote a magnificent piece that I'm getting wind of on community schooling, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we're talking about community schooling, then that means that you're not looking at it through the lens of the certain power dynamics that exist in schools. You're now extending your power out to the community, right? You're making the community now a part of the school. And so by doing that, you're asking pertinent questions to this community, as in, what do you want? What do you want from the school in order for us to be successful? If I'm a school leader and I'm coming into a community, I have to ask that community, what do they want? I cannot make assumptions and assume that I know what they want without asking them.
Mm-hmm, 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 but I guess I'm trying to figure out like the everything we know about black folks, and we'll just go with the generic involvement framing.
Chris. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I'm tracking your argument, your assertion would imply, and I'll just use black fathers, right? That because of what you described, that black fathers are less involved in their child's life.
Ooh, I didn't say that though. No, I didn't say that.
So I guess I'm just trying to understand, like, well, how are we being outcompeted when the factors in the lives of families that sit at the margins are just more complicated, and schools need to do better at finding ways to reach that group of parents? Why is it singularly on parents as opposed to, yes, and I'm not denying that we need to figure out ways to get black parents more engaged, right, in mass and in pockets. But it also is important for us to provide critique and criticism and analysis of what's wrong with schools in that parents don't want to go there. Schools do the same rinse and repeat behavior of parent-teacher conferences, of family night. Like our son's new middle school that he's going to, they've done family nights. And, you know, like it was the two of them that they ran were at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Listen, this is what I feel like. I feel like that's all we do.
Is what? What do we do?
Critique the system and critique this. And this is what I think. If I was the system and mm-hmm. I were the people responsible for teaching our kids and I wasn't one of us, if I was a white person in the school system listening to this, I don't know that you would sway me very much to do anything different than what I'm doing already. I might be like, listen, I got all the jobs. My people are showing up and they're getting what they need out of it. You're asking for my benevolence. You're asking.
Are they, though, Chris? Are they getting what they need out of it? Let's talk about that. Are they really getting what they need out of it?
I mean, C students are becoming presidents. So, I mean, like, you know, like when we get a president, he got to be Harvard Law Review. You know, like bro, he got to be Harvard Law Review and everything else too. I mean, he has to have organized the grassroots and have stood at the heights of all scholarship, right? They get a dude who then failed four times out of college and got put back in each time, becomes president. Yes, they are getting what they want out of it. Yes, they are winning the sweepstakes. Yes, they are getting all the seats at the magnet schools with the advanced programs. Yes, they are winning the AP sweepstakes and the international baccalaureate sweepstakes. Yes, they are winning all the advantaged positions within the system. And yes, they have all the jobs. And yes, they have all the pensions. And yes, the $700 billion that we put in that system is mostly going into them, their communities. They are taking those paychecks back to their suburban tax bases. Yes, they are getting what they want out of it. And there's this one group who's bitching about not getting anything out of it without showing up, but expecting like rainmakers. You're just going to like do a rain dance and expect it to rain. We're just going to keep critiquing them and they're suddenly going to do something different that changes the advantage system. It changes the system of advantages.
You said before, right? You're coming in hot, coming in beige, right?
Right. And beige so, as hell. Beijing. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And so if you didn't just make, if that wasn't just a Homer Plessy argument.
It's a Malcolm X argument, bro.
There's a Homer Plessy argument too, bro.
So, it's a Malcolm X argument. The idea that you're going to turn your kids over to your enemy and have them come back educated is only a fool who does that.
But so
it's only a fool does it. Do you think we're going to critique them into us getting what we need out of the system? Yeah. This is how we're going to get what we want out of the system, by being aggressive as hell. As aggressive as everybody else. Do you know what the other groups are doing? They're hiring attorneys when they can't get into certain schools and shit. They're like getting laws passed so that they can get priority access. They're getting the equivalent of like TSA and Clear. They're getting like Clear. You know, the equivalent for those who fly a lot, they're getting the equivalent of TSA and Clear in the education system. And we still on Southwest talking about, I hope I get in the right part of the line.
We're talking about this. Chris, we talked about we're not giving people secrets in terms of how to skip the line at the airport. We talked about this. That's
right. No, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. Everybody scratch that last part we just said. There's nothing too clear. You don't want clear. You don't want clear. You don't want these magnet schools, and you don't want AP, and you don't want IB. You don't want the fast lane. You don't want governors greasing the skids so that you can just double down on your privilege. You want to just critique the system for not being low class enough or working class enough in the way that it calls your name.
All right, point
taken. It ain't never gonna call your name.
Point taken, right? And so in you defending your point so eloquently, right? Because I want to move this conversation forward. What are the answers now? And so for me, those answers start with, how does it look for us to have our own damn schools? How does it look to fund those schools? And how does it look to not depend on philanthropy in order to fund these schools and to have a self-sufficient model that does not depend on any type of philanthropy?
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's try that. It means that if we're not going to be dependent on philanthropy, let's just go with that. Mm-hmm. We need a stream of revenue.
Yes.
So the streams of revenue, as I see it in terms of options, are wealthy Black people putting money into spaces where it needs to go, and us being willing to offer up a critique when it does not. That's the first thing.
Okay.
And giving a roadmap. And the reason why I say that is, and I've done this before, and people get all like, oh my God, I can't believe you saying this. When the brother, I think it's Robert Smith, gave all that money to Morehouse, I was not impressed. Mm-hmm. And what I said to people was, I think that it's great that he did that and that they canceled student debt for Morehouse, Spelman, whatever it is. But if you use Pell Grant recipients as the metric of need at an HBCU, right? Morehouse and Spelman have some of the lowest percentage of students getting Pell Grants, and they have one of the highest endowments of all HBCUs.
Damn, is that true?
So essentially,
you don't spit facts. Damn.
So essentially, we have reproduced the same oppression economically that we claim we want to challenge. I am not suggesting, I don't want people to hear me and say, Simmons is saying that those kids don't deserve it. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that to Ray's point and to Chris's point, going to solutions, if we have millionaires and billionaires in our communities that are going to be a part of the solution, we also have to have a mechanism to tell them that they made the wrong decision and how they're going to fund the revolution through schools. And when you say that type of thing, people get all up in arms like, oh my God, I can't believe that X and Y and Z. And I'm like, yo, like, it is not a critique of that brother, Oprah, any of these people and their values, because they mean well. And there are Black folks at Morehouse and Spelman that need that money. That's not my point. My point is that how do you divide it up from a percentage perspective? So if we want to start schools and we're going to take $20 billion, how do we divide it up over time based on relevant data as opposed to our random emotions of, oh, this made me feel so good. I gave all this money to Morehouse and Spelman. And again, I am not suggesting that Morehouse and Spelman are bad institutions, that those young people don't deserve the money. That's not my point. But to Ray's point, in order for us to get to the creation of these institutions, we have people who have those resources. We need to be able to provide guidance for them, and they need to be willing to receive guidance from those that are experts and professionals in how to build these types of systems.
Hey, so real quick, I'll take Mackenzie Scott money. So I know we were talking before about Black philanthropy. Mm-hmm. I'll take money from Mackenzie Scott.
You know, for the record, just if anybody who's listening who is connected to Mackenzie, I'll take it too. You know, just bright beam. Forget what Brother Robert has said here. Anyways.
That's one solution, Chris.
Okay, go ahead. I mean, listen, it's a solution. However, However, I don't know that it cures the actual problem we're talking about right now, though.
Why not?
Why not?
I mean, so I say yes to everything you said. I say yes to everything that Ray said. We need our own schools. We need to build Black educational capital. We need to control the means of education. We need to invest in ourselves. We need the Black dollar to go around more than just one lap before it goes out of the Black community. Yep. All of these things are true.
Yeah.
We also need able-bodied, available Black parents to show up at their schools whenever they can, before we own our own schools, before we have this Black educational capital, before we gain all these other things. Right now, we still need Black parents showing up when and how they can, whenever, to the extent that you have three jobs and you can't find, I'm not talking to you. Oh. To the extent that you don't know how to get to the school, fine, I'm not talking to you. To the extent that you know that it's a Real Housewives night on and you don't want to miss it, I'm not talking to you either. I'm just talking to the group of us, because there's 30 million Black people in this country.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And let me just put it this way, too. If you are listening to this, I am not just talking. Like, see, we get caught up in this trap where we start equating Black with poor. No. I don't know why we always do this thing about, like, they three jobs and they can't make it. They're so broken down and blah, blah, blah. Listen, there are middle-class Black people that have two cars and three cars and four cars.
I see some of these cars driving in a parking lot, man, and I go home and I be like, babe.
Bro, you could go
doing wrong.
Some neighborhoods you can go through and every garage that opens has a Benz or something in it, right? And these are Black neighborhoods. I get sick of us equating ourselves with the ones that just can't do anything.
So Chris,
there's a lot of us that can. There's a lot of us that can. Yeah. And there's a lot of us that don't.
So let me push
in
you.
In terms of showing up, because like in Loudoun County and these other places where these Moms for Liberty and others are popping up.
Yeah.
I happen to know some people that live in some of those places.
I know some people too.
And they don't want to show up because they don't want to be ostracized by their neighbors. They don't want to be ostracized by their neighbors. I've had people say to me directly, I don't need that type of problem.
Right? Hey, that sounds like somebody on the show right now.
Right? I'm like, yes, you do. Yes, you do. If they're going to be up there screaming, we need to be up there screaming. Chris, like, listen, you know.
Chris, listen. So I'm a school leader, right? I have these curriculum nights. I have these parent nights. And all of the things that you talk of in terms of this deficit lens that you're looking in terms of parents not showing up, my parents demystify everything that you just said. Because anytime we throw an event at our school, that shit is packed out. You can't even park down the street. The local police department is always pissed off with me because they're like, hey, you're causing a road hazard. You're causing this. You're causing that. Because my parents will park on the highway to walk into the school in order to represent for their kids. And so everything that you're saying right now, like, I don't see it.
What's the demographics of your students?
Demographics of my students is 85% Black and brown.
Let's not do that.
Shooting low.
You know, what's the difference between the Black and the brown?
It's a major difference.
Okay, all right.
Parents don't show up, though.
Huh?
It's my school.
It's majority brown school, right?
Yeah.
Majority Latino. Okay, all right. Well, listen.
But Raymond,
mm-hmm.
superintendent,
mm-hmm.
of the Black families that you
show
have.
Up. They show up.
Okay, that's what we need to get.
Show up.
It doesn't matter the size or like all that.
It does. Percentage. It does.
It does not, Chris.
It does.
Chris, it does matter. You're a real deficit.
It does. You sound like you still read Ruby Payne, bro.
Oh, listen, I wish I would have invested in Ruby Payne. Ruby's a billionaire. Ruby is on the beach of Turks and Caicos somewhere right now listening to this show. She ain't even listening. Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to lose this battle. I know I am from the beginning. And I have to play this role because I do believe there's always more that we could do for our kids. And I believe we often give ourselves a lot of grace on things we should be doing. And we've formed a narrative. We formed a way of speaking about it where It's just we say the same thing over and over again about our own people. And it's actually not, it doesn't bear out to be true in my mind in real life, right? Like the oft talked about person with three jobs. We have a lot of people who don't have one job. And we have a lot of people that like, you know, and I'm thinking of actual people. And when I say these things, who it, there are other reasons that they don't want to go to the school. And we may have hit on some of them. They don't want to be bothered with it. They don't want to, it's not a place that makes them feel comfortable. It's not it's, like their thing, but they're sending their kid to it every day.
But if that's the case, right? If that's the case, and it's a place that has been a traumatic experience through generations of people, right? And so you got folks that are coming out, you got end users that are coming out that are barely literate, right? And these, this is like two, three generations. So this is mom, this is grandma, this is great grandma. Right.
Damn,
so
you're doing it again, bro.
Yeah, but you don't think they have some type of you don't think they have some kind of lived trauma with regards to walking exactly. into schools?
And no, I don't, bro. I'm sorry. I'm done with this. I'm done with this. You know why I'm done with this? Because we will awfulize ourselves into a corner constantly. This is how we talk about ourselves constantly. This is the only thing this is the way we talk about ourselves. Like we awfulize ourselves to death. Yes, there's some people that have been through some things. Yes, there's some people that have encountered some things that make them not feel like schools are comfortable or whatnot. I was one of them because I failed in school, right? But my kid was in that damn school, right? My kid was in there. I was sending him in there every day and I was militant as hell. And I wasn't by myself. I wasn't the only one who was militant about it. Even when we were completely ignorant about how the whole thing worked, we still raised our voices and whatnot. And people are doing that every day too. This is the thing. We are doing some of this or whatnot. Let's stop awfulizing into the, first of all, not all Black people are in urban schools. We're in suburban and urban settings now.
And rural.
We're not all poor. As a matter of fact, the majority of us are not poor, right? And the majority of us actually.
Where's the research on that, sir?
Where's the research on the fact that the majority of us are not poor?
It depends on the community. I think this is
the majority of Black people. When I say we, I mean Black people. The majority of Black Americans are not poor.
I would say it depends. And
depends on what, bruh?
Based on the data that we know about childhood poverty, that's how we should be thinking about this as well, is that the percentage of kids who experience poverty is one measure of the ways in which our families are experiencing the world. And like, if I think about Syracuse, New York as a city, like at least 75-80% of third graders in Syracuse, New York are living below the poverty line. They have the highest child poverty rate in the country for a city over 100,000 people in Syracuse, New York.
Okay, and so take this one step further, right? Since we're looking at data from Syracuse, what's the reading level for third graders?
13%.
So you can pretty much make a parallel.
It was 22% before the pandemic, so I want to give that as a caveat.
Mm-hmm. But you can pretty much make the parallel between childhood poverty and literacy rates.
Oh, yeah. There's a correlation, right? It doesn't have to be. But there is, right? And I think that...
I mean, I get what you're saying about localizing it, but a quarter of our children are poor nationally. A quarter of Black children are poor.
I think that number is low.
It's 26%. 26% of Black children are in poverty. Of course, you have concentrations.
That's a number, Chris.
That's a quarter. That means 75% of our children are not, and we talk about our children as if they're all poor.
All right, so Chris,
we talk about Black people as if it equates to poor.
So based off of that data,
it does not equate to poor, except for what Robert just said is absolutely true. We have concentrations of poverty.
Okay,
so we have places where like you know the majority of people are poor, but nationally speaking, and let me not keep mincing words when I'm talking about the show up factor and the parental factor.
Yeah,
I am not limiting that to poor parents. Parents in poverty.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they get more of a pass than anybody. They should get more of a pass than anybody. But we have a lot of upper working class and middle class Black folks who are also parents.
Well, like, Chris, you can't have curriculum night at the same time as Peloton class.
Oh my God, stop it. And the goat yoga class, like, oh, I couldn't make it because I had to do goat yoga. Listen, I'm doing my job well by playing the not God advocate on this.
I don't know if you are, because like,
you know why? Because I'm echoing what I think the majority of everybody thinks about us.
So let me ask you
this. Echoing not just what white folks think about us, but what the new minorities, the new chosen minorities, also in the back of their minds, they know that they got us cornered because we're stuck in this circular argument and they are moving forward.
But Chris, so if you're saying that 74% of children are outside of the realms of poverty, right? Mm-hmm. And it only accounts for 26%.
Mm-hmm.
So shouldn't 74% of those kids be proficient in reading?
I mean, what would you do if your kids weren't reading?
I would do whatever I had to do in order to make sure that they were.
Really? Like what? What would you do if your kids weren't reading?
If my kids were not reading on grade level,
mm-hmm. what would you do?
Then I would find outside resources in order to make sure that they were. Mm-hmm. I would take my kids to the library.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good one. Keep going. What else would you do?
I would find just right books for them based off of their reading levels. I would mm-hmm. also ask mm-hmm. their teachers what the hell their reading levels are.
Mm-hmm.
My kids would then mm-hmm. know their reading level. I would
that
then
is if the teacher actually responds to your email, but that's another story.
if the teacher don't respond to my email, guess what's not going to happen? I'm not waiting for curriculum night. I'm pulling up to find out exactly what the hell is going on. If I don't
until
get
they say, time, well, the teacher is teaching, so you can't meet with them right now. I'm only wait. Time you can meet.
I'm gonna wait.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have flexibility to do that.
Okay, you're absolutely right. And so in the instance in which I don't have flexibility to do that, then I'm flying my mom here. She gonna do it. Or I'm flying a relative here that got a day off. They gonna do it. Somebody gonna goddamn do it. Because we got to find out what's going on, because these babies got to be reading on grade level. And that's any means necessary.
This is the thing. What you just said is true for you and many people like you. This is the thing. As we get locked into these other discussions about how awfulized we should be, the truth of the matter is, if any of us had a problem with reading or math or anything with our kids or whatnot, somebody would be doing something. We would be doing something in our house, but somebody else in the school would be doing something. They would hear from us. And if they didn't respond to us, something else would happen, right? Like
the school systems. You know how when you walk into Chris, you ever heard of the trap? Rob, you heard of the trap, right?
Yes.
Right. So you know, these school systems are the trap. Ain't no difference mm-hmm. between the school system mm-hmm. trap and the hood trap. It's the trap. And mm-hmm. so. Here's the thing.
That's you gotta
make a decision on how you gonna survive in the trap.
That's the point right there. We all have to make a decision, knowing that the school system is skewed against us in many ways, knowing that it is not going to fix itself anytime soon, knowing that any of the critiques that we say about it aren't about to change anytime soon. I don't think our strategy should be to level another better critique on the system. We can keep doing that for those of us that have the luxury to be able to keep doing that while our kids are in safe harbor. But for the ones that don't have kids in safe harbor, the critique of the existing system isn't a strategy. That's just, it's just a critique. It's not actual strategy for getting more of our kids literate and numerate and getting the most services or whatnot. Now, if you have been a school board member before, you have seen what parents do when they come to schools to try and get their kids advantages. You've seen how they come in packs sometimes to get their kids advantages. Sure. And you've seen how political it gets. And I don't think the public understands that game. I don't think the public sees what you see when you're a school board member on the receiving end of organized parents that don't look super organized. They're not screaming. They're not shouting and protesting in streets or anything like that. And somehow they're getting all the advantages out of the system for their kids.
I've seen some people join the damn school board in order to get those advantages.
They get one of their friends on the school board, and then all of a sudden,
I've seen people.
That's right.
Join the school board in order for them to have those advantages.
And you know what that is? That's a strategy.
100%.
It's a winning strategy that helps them get the most out of the system constantly.
So, Chris, what? Give me one thing that you would propose from a school board lens that schools can do differently for parents to be to come to the school. Like, what? What you're laying this at the feet of the parents only, but what about schools? Like, structurally, what can we do differently on that part of the strategy? What has to change in schools? Like, should we have a policy that all parent-teacher conferences should happen in homes or at a central location? Like, what type of policy would you implement if you were still on the school board?
I mean, when I was on the school board, we implemented a ton of policies and none of them worked, right? Including everything from midday and nighttime and chicken dinners and tamale nights.
No.
I am going to do this because they put out surveys to the community and the community listed all these things that would make it easier for them to come. And then the school district did all of those things and they still didn't come. Right. This is my point. This is the reality. Yeah, okay, so when I talk about like what I am saying right now, I'm speaking for the educator who's never going to tell the truth because they know they're going to get shouted down if they say the things that they've seen and the things that they've tried and the things that they've like tried to work on and whatnot. They're never going to admit it. They'll never admit it. You'll get them in 15 different diversity courses and they'll never admit it because they know that to admit it is to open themselves up to a whole bunch of backlash. Well, you didn't do this and you didn't do that and you didn't try this. And the truth of the matter is they've hired whole people. They've put whole budgets in place. They've changed the hours of things. They've put out food. They've, you know, St. Paul Public Schools had a home school visit program. Some people loved it. Some people didn't. Like, some people didn't want you coming in their house. Right. And you know, on the school side of things, teachers didn't love doing it either, to be very honest with you. A lot of teachers, you know, left a lot of the budget from that program on the table after fighting for it. Oh, we need home visits. And they tried the home visiting program, didn't work out, right? You're talking to a lot of people who have tried. There are educators who don't give a damn who are never going to try. That's one group of people. Bro, there are the other educators who have tried everything and keep putting money into things and hiring consultants and hiring people to come in and help them, and people who talk a good game about knowing the community. I know the community.
So
I'm from this community.
Let me say this.
Eight people to show up. Go ahead.
Tell you about home visits, right? So I took a job probably about 2008, Harlem Village Academies in Harlem. And upon taking this job, I had to do 100 home visits within 2 weeks' time. Housing developments throughout East Harlem, West Harlem, whatever, right? And my motivation behind doing it was that the first day of school, I wanted those fifth graders to see a familiar face, someone that has been to their house, someone that has made a connection with their parent, right? And you know, there was some reschedules, there was all kinds of things that needed to be done in order for me to make sure that I got to all 100 home visits. But I did, because I was intrinsically motivated to get to know those parents so that I could get to know those students, so those students could start off with their best foot forward. Mm-hmm. And I know not every educator is built like that. I know every educator is not going to want to go into housing developments in East Harlem and West Harlem and all these other things, right? I'm not from Harlem, and I didn't want to do it. However, I did it, right? And I still have connections with some of those fifth graders today. One of them just got married on Saturday. Right. And so, you know, if you are an educator and you're willing to peel beneath the layers and do whatever it takes in order for your kids to be successful, then that success yields. Right. And those families will remember you. And I'm not saying that that's what you should do it for, but that's what I did it for.
This is what I think the deal public school is making you right now. American public school is making you a deal. You show up. You come here, you do your homework, you sniff out the best programs and you sniff out the best pathways and tracks and get yourself on them. You're going to be part of the master class and you're going to get a free education that puts you on track to be the master class. Everybody else, keep doing what you're doing. Don't show up, come late, be chronically absent. Don't apply for things, whatever. No. Listen, I'm telling you, this is really the deal that the system is making you. The system is being very explicit about this is the deal, right? I'm not making this up. The system itself has been telling you for 100 years, this is the deal. We don't care about any of any of that stuff that y'all say. Now, we have spent a lot of money on DEI and others to try and make schools more welcoming and open. And
I got my ideas about
that. I know, like, I want to protect it and defend it myself because I think, you know, I think we have put, we've made some progress because we've had those efforts in schools. But I do think the system is still making you the same deal. You got to fight for like a good education in the public education system. You don't just get it. It's not like just a, you know, even in the white suburban schools or whatnot, them parents are sniffing out every advantage and opportunity pathways that they can put their kids on, even in their own systems, you know, where it's pretty good for them. All right. Well, listen, I know we're going to come up on time, but I want to get y'all, because Ray, you chose violence. You put this out into the world. So I'm going to add this, this part of the discussion to the discussion today, because you did this to this poor woman. And I'm just going to like try and save this poor woman, because you didn't cause violence on a good white woman. Let me add this here too. People listening and watching this, this is a nice white woman who teaches black children. There's emotional music in the background. Black children are dapping her up and slapping her up and fist pumping. And they're all different kinds of black kids, tall, big, short, skinny. You know, it's just, it's a beautiful moment. And for her courage to dap up black children in the morning, she experienced violence from a guy named Ray Ingram, who put her on Twitter and basically said, "What the hell is this?"
This narration.
Look at it as she hugs the black children. She slaps, double dutch. She is doing all kinds of stuff, but the running man. Ooh, and hugging. And just, ooh, kicking. Kid and play. Ooh, house party. She has been kinesthetic teaching and learning in action. And yet, for her troubles of trying to be good to the Negroes, she got Ray Ingram all up on her. Bro, what is wrong with you? Why would you do that?
First off, right, as I'm looking at this, matter of fact, I'm passing it to Rob. Rob, I know you had a similar reaction as me. Sir, what was your reaction?
First of all, you ain't got that much time in a day to be doing all that. First of all, like, what kind of teacher got time to do all that with 30-something odd kids or whatever's in that lot? That's the first thing. Second of all, there's tons of other ways to build relationships with children. You slapping their hands. I mean, I done seen it all. Like, they highlight the teacher doing music, playing the guitar. It was one of them a couple of months ago or something crazy.
Yep.
I'm like, yo, I mean, that's cute. But cute ain't gonna teach my child to read. You slapping their hand and all of this, hooting and holler, whatever it is. Like, why can't you do that when they in the classroom? I don't. When I saw that, I sent Ray a text like, what is this? Like, are they serious? They're celebrating this.
Yeah.
Can them kids read?
No. Bro, and if you looked at the initial post, right, from Anaka, whatever organization it is, right?
Epoch,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Epoch Inspired.
And you look at the comments underneath, right? It was just majority white people that were like, "Oh my God, she's making such good connections with the blacks. Oh my God. She cares about them. Oh my God." This, that, and the fourth. And so it triggered me, right? Because I know as a black parent, I can speak for many other black parents. I don't give a shit about nobody teaching my kid no hand clap or whatever. I want you to teach my kid how to read. I want you to teach my kid how to compute. And if you are spending 5 minutes time in a 45-minute block, right, then how much time is my kid losing while you out here doing this and doing that, right? But the thing that we didn't do, because this does not exonerate folks that are of our hue that do that shit too, right? I don't care about you getting on Ellen. I don't care about you getting on any of these talk shows or Gap celebrating you and giving you money and like giving you a commercial spot. I don't give a shit about none of that. I care about my kids being able to read. That's all I got to say about that.
Oh man, y'all just a mess. Y'all so wrong about this.
Chris, like what? Like what? Who cares? Like why is this even news?
You know what? What got me about it was education? I saw it pop up, and this is what I thought to myself. Number one, I thought we so reactionary to everything that we done drugged this poor woman for a 5-minute morning ritual. Teachers set rituals in their classrooms all the time, different rituals. And there are behavioral management reasons for doing it.
Bullshit. And, I saw that too. No. Back up.
What? Okay.
There was some idiots that decided that they wanted to take a survey that was of 203 students and got them 10 teachers. And they wanted to say, well, research supports the fact that if you do this in the morning, then you'll have less behavior problems. And that's bullshit. And I'm tired of these people playing with us on Twitter. Stop playing in our faces like we can't do research ourselves.
All right. Well, you know, angry black man aside, let me just say, let me just say this. Like, listen, there are 3 million teachers in the United States. The majority of them look like this young woman here. If I am being empathetic, I am thinking that this young woman has done a number of things that she thinks are her expression of creating a warmer, better learning environment for her kids. It gets put in a video and it goes online. And the immediate response is you would swear that she was the worst neo-Confederate of all times. And I don't know that that's a strategy for getting 3 million teachers to, number one, try anything. Because first of all, if I was her...
I don't want you to try that.
I can always look at people and just think to myself, what if I were them? If I was getting drugged on Twitter, I'd be like, screw all y'all. I do not give a damn. You're not in here teaching these kids. I'm making my effort. I am doing what I can do. And this is just like a 5-minute morning ritual to set the standard before kids walk into my classroom. And, you know, listen, you visit enough schools, you see teachers do all kinds of ritualistic things, like ritualistic. Like, that's what I've noticed, like all these different little things that they've got going on. And in the beginning, they're all these, they set up rituals. They set up all kinds of classroom rituals, and it's all to control behavior. It's all behavior management stuff. So
first off, right?
Yeah.
Let's think about what you're saying right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What I'm saying is wrong.
You got a line full of black kids.
Yeah.
You saying that their behavior needs to be controlled. You don't think there's something wrong with that?
Oh, no, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Oh, no. What? No, I'm sorry. No. Y'all obviously don't know children. Y'all don't know children. I don't care what color the children are. You better have some behavior management. Have you ever visited a school with no behavior management?
Yes, I have.
Have you ever visited a school where you ask yourself, what the? And I'm not talking about black schools. I'm talking about schools, period. Have you ever visited a school where they have no plan to keep kids on track during the day?
Once a month. And I tell you what. In this school that I visit once a month, I don't give a shit if you got a little baby that comes through the handshake. Some kids is still like,
bruh, I'm telling you right now, I understand after like visiting enough schools, I understand why people start trying to put little things in place. Like, you know, I make fun on this show all the time about slant.
Yeah.
And I think slant is worthy of making fun of. I still think it's like some over control. Type stuff.
It is.
But I get, say it again, what it stands for. Do you know all the slants? It's like, it just basically means watch me, don't say nothing, track your eyes on me, I respond to you, whatever, something like that, right? It's
you
like
hear Rob, you hear Rob earlier, but he was like, yeah, I track you.
That's, look, Ray, you already know, I won't even name these organizations that track the speaker.
Kip,
Urban Teachers.
I mean, it's a thing, but basically it's all meant to do the same thing, which is actually try and make it so you don't have loud, crazy, obnoxious classrooms where people are jumping off of desks and stuff. Right.
What?
Right. So, oh, come on. Tell me you've never seen that in a school.
Yes, I've seen it. But like, why do we have to turn schools into like these dogmatic track the speaker?
Like, well, you don't. No. And I'm not arguing for it. I'm just saying I'm sympathetic to having to put some things in place so that you don't have those.
Like, yeah,
you
know, like, I got that part. Yeah, but like, what? I mean, yeah, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole that Ray mentioned because I got a story in D.C. that happened about a shirt and rental and folks was all in uproar. I think I've told this story. Ray's probably heard me tell this story before. But it gets the people at DC all riled up when I tell this story.
Well, tell it then. Now I need to hear it.
There was a uproar in DC several years ago because a particular charter management organization in DC requires kids to wear a uniform.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether you agree with uniforms or not is irrelevant for this conversation, mm-hmm. right? I'm fine with it. It doesn't bother me. But I get it, people who don't. Neither here nor there. Kids' parents, like they picked up extra shifts doing something. And the kid came with his sweatshirt or whatever it was. He didn't have it. And he said, well, it didn't get washed. So, you know, I don't have it. They gave him one. And on it, it said rental in permanent marker.
Chris, don't find nothing wrong with this.
And people in the community were like, wait, what? Like, rental? Like, why can't y'all just give him a hoodie? Because this particular charter network has a foundation that rakes in multi-millions. You can afford to give this young person a hoodie or whatever the shirt was. And not even worry about it. Like, why do you have to brand this person, this young person, as having a rental, as opposed to building a trusting relationship and saying, look, like, bring it back at the end of the day. If you need to take it to the crib, take it to the crib. Like, why? Like, and that's the part for me where it's organizational behavior like that, where they, this same type of organization also in many places is run schools, in my experience, not all, I want to be clear, in a prison format of stand up, sit down, track the speaker, blah, 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 blah. Like,
you making my point for me in some ways though. Now you're making my point. So listen, let me back into this a little bit. What you just said, there's a range of things that schools are doing to try and control behavior, to make schools operate through the day, like to get kids from, like, there's a lot of content to cover. And because there's so much content to cover, they're trying to make every minute. And you said earlier, well, who's got 5 minutes?
Yeah, you don't.
No. Who's got 5 minutes? Now, just get your mind around that neoliberal concept there, sir. Who's got 5 minutes to say hello to children?
181 days times 5 minutes
to say hello to children in the morning. Listen, this is the point that I think will bring it home for me, which is you just mentioned a number of things that I think fall on the bad side of this. You know, the branding kids. You could add things to that, like lunch shaming. You know, like,
fair enough.
You know, like all that stuff. That's all, what's the word for that? Retributive behavior. That's all malice-oriented behavior. Dapping up your children and giving them hugs in the morning before they fall in, you know, before they come in your room, fall on a different side of the spectrum of these behavior management things. It falls on the, I care about my kids. There are teachers that have pantries in their classrooms for girls on their period, for deodorant, for things that like they are doing out of their own pockets. They're like stocking these things up. So you have these schools talk about rental sweatshirts. And then you have these other teachers who have whole ass pantries in their room that them, their families and their churches have stocked, right? So when I see a young teacher dapping up the kids and all that stuff, I associate that with this side of the spectrum versus the lunch shaming, the cheese sandwiches, the uniform infraction stuff and all that stuff.
I can agree with you on that. Like on a continuum, yes. Like from bad, better to worse.
181 days times five, that's you're doing harm.
You're doing harm by taking 5 minutes to welcome students into your classroom.
Five minutes is a long time, bro.
I feel like now you guys are sounding like the neoliberals. That's so crazy. 5 minutes.
Every 8 days is a class period. You're not about to come to me and have this argument with me about, oh well, standardized testing, and you guys shouldn't test people because it takes too long. It takes too long. You're taking up two class periods. And then you want to dab every day? Hell no. No, sir.
But like, but in fairness, I'm a little so unclear. Terrible. Like, does she do this every day? Is it
then
like,
why she do it? Why you do it? Why you doing it? Clearly you're doing it for the camera. Clearly you're
I don't know about that. I just think it takes up a lot of time. And I was asking myself, well, like, what are the kids doing while she's in the hallway?
Yeah, the 28 other ones that, oh no, you know what she don't, you know what they're doing? They're controlled now because they didn't got the hug and they didn't got the dap. And so they sitting and based off
this is why people don't want to teach your kids. This is why people don't want to teach your children.
Yeah, I mean,
this is why they want to teach your based children. Off
the research, because
damned if you do, damned if you don't.
They sit in slant. They waiting for the do now. They in slant, waiting for the do now because they didn't adapt up.
Okay, so let me ask you this. She scraps this. She hears from Black Twitter how much of a terrible person she is now for doing this.
I ever said anything?
Yes, they did. The comments they came for, they drug the hell out of this teacher.
Okay.
So she stopped doing it now.
Drug his ass too.
So nobody drugged
that's the Black teacher. That's not true, sir. That is not true. We got two people on this thing right now.
Yeah, y'all was like, only two. Okay. It was just y'all two. But I will say this. So she stops doing this, and she just now just get in the classroom. Let's get started. We got math to do.
Oh, hi. Hello. How was your day?
Hi. Hello. Now, slant. Watch me. Let's get to class because we don't have five minutes to say hello.
There's SEL check-ins that she can do. That take way less time.
They don't take less time.
They take way less time than 5 minutes.
Bro, a five-minute check-in with your class. Teachers, they're not dapping each other up on the outside of the classroom. But lots of teachers are trying to set the stage for learning. And so 5 minutes is not a ton of time.
So you could
in my mind.
You could set in your mind, yeah.
Yeah, in my mind.
You could set the stage for learning way simpler and through ways that are less problematic than that way. SEL checks that you can do in terms of like checking in a red, yellow, green situation that could be like, where are you now? Right. Mm-hmm. In order to create safe environments for kids. We didn't have to see all that.
All right. Well, listen, y'all, we have come to the end of another episode of the Eight Black Hands. Today we were talking about parents' bill of rights. I wanted to raise the issue about a parent's bill of responsibilities, and especially responsibilities if you think about the idea that we need a movement to save our kids from the system, and the system isn't very sympathetic to us. That's just my own analysis. I have not found it to be very sympathetic to us at all. And the idea that we might guilt it or rationalize it into better shape or condition. There's been so many people who have said, even on this show, the system's not failing. The system's doing exactly what it was designed to do. And it was designed to sort kids. It was designed to sort kids by economics and by race and put some on track for leadership positions in the United States to run the country and to put everybody else on the track to be serfs. So it's working spectacularly. It's doing that. So if you knew that and you were on the serf track, you probably would want to put some sort of cog in the system that jams it up, that changes the game. I introduced something on this show I don't think we talk about very much, which is I believe that, and these will be my final words, I believe that it's being treated very much like a competition in a race, kind of like Survivor Island. And I think other minorities are being offered an anti-Black coupon to if you join with us against the Blacks, we will put you on the white track too, because we need to beef up our numbers. And I believe that other groups are taking that contract. When I see things like Asian Americans, for instance, being used in lawsuits to repeal diversity programs that were letting more of our kids into TJ in Virginia and Lowell in San Francisco or whatnot, I think that that's a sign of something to come. There's more of that to happen. And that's going to start popping up. The new meritocracy that's going to leave us behind again and again and again. Those are my final words on this. Is parents, you got rights. Obviously, you already have rights to know what's going on in schools. What you don't have is a mandate to show up and find out how to use your rights when you get there and to actually show up. So I'm going to leave it there and let one of you fine fellas, you know, go next and give your final words on this show.
Yeah. So final words for me, very simple. Tomorrow, Lunch and Learn, EduPeers podcast. Check that out. 12 noon, running on all my socials. That's the first thing. Second thing is shout out to folks that found us tonight. I know some folks was hitting me up. They couldn't find us on Facebook. But to our loyal followers that found us via Twitter and via YouTube, we appreciate you. We love you. And we'll try to do better the next week. Those are my final thoughts.
I appreciate that. Before we go to Robert, I'll just say StreamYard, which is our service that we use to broadcast to you tonight, had multiple problems, not the least of which was I was in the Black Album for the entire show today. I wasn't Bayesian. I was the Black Album today. And two, yes, it did have problems connecting to our Facebook account, which is where we get the majority of our viewers from. So that was a problem for tonight. Robert, it's on you, brother.
Yeah, I think, I just am, thankful that there's a robust conversation about this. I think my closing thoughts are, as someone who's advocated for a son who is very much neurodiverse and has a great special education teacher and a great general education teacher, I want to encourage parents, families, extended family to really begin to find out, to Chris's point and Ray's point, about how the kids are doing in school and spend more time doing that, email, phone calls, social media, going up to the school. Because I have found that our youngest son has taught me a lot about how to advocate for your own child. And it actually matters. It actually has an impact on a whole lot of things. So I want to encourage folks to actually take up the challenge that we've kind of laid out here and do that for your children.
I mean, see, this is my point. Be militant, be present, be gentle when you have to be gentle, be whatever you gotta be. And I feel you. I wish we had talked about this sooner, because as somebody who has a similar situation in my house who isn't getting all the services sometimes until we ask for them or have to demand or show up. Sometimes you have plans in place and they're not being honored, and they will keep not being honored as long until you say something. We found that out the hard way. So be militant, Black men, Black fathers, especially be militant, be visible, be heard. We put something out this week. We got retweeted by Dove, the bar soap company. We had put something out about Black fathers and Black fatherhood. And every time we do that, Dove soap retweets us. And they have a whole campaign around visibility of Black fathers and seeing Black fathers. Yeah, I thought that was something really dope. And this show, of course, is a father powered podcast. Now, so we should hold that up and bear witness for other brothers that are raising children and having to get militant sometimes. As always, we appreciate you. Watch the show again if you missed it, because we know we had some technical difficulties. Share it with a friend or family member and help us get the word out for the 8 Black Hands. We'll see you again next week for episode 203. I think it is. Man, we are moving along.